track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sermon Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade One race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Say you stand by your man. Tell me something I don't understand.
We're back at the races. It's about 20 into hour two. Been a fast-moving morning between Lenny Shulman and the news that Lenny is going to write the Justify biography. I guess it's an authorized biography, but I don't know how much help Justify himself will be to the telling of the story. It won't be one of those as-told-to books. But it is with so many working parts that the Justify career, it should be tremendous. So that was fun to break that news with Lenny, and then Larry Ravelli, who is a major character for those of you that don't know. And here's another character right out of Central Casting, Tony Black. Good morning.
Hello there, Steve. I kind of halfway lost my voice. I caught a cold. You know, when the kids start school, they bring colds home. And
oh, yeah.
Ugh. Then they bring it home and give it to their parents. You know, they really, truly love you. But my little girl came home with a cold last Thursday, and then when she got rid of it, I picked it up. So, but I hope my voice is good enough where I'm not annoying anybody. Now, at the track, I told a few people the last couple days I'm losing my voice, and everybody applauded. They thought that was great. That's what worries me.
you got a little bit of the Johnny D sound going.
Hey, yeah, I never thought about that. But Johnny D keeps it that way. I wonder, you know, I'm just maybe trying to mimic Johnny D. I do sound like him, and it took you to remind me of how Johnny D sounds. You know, I was out there yesterday morning, and I missed the show. Took me all morning to get on Six Horses for Vega. He was running slow yesterday, and of course, I get on my favorite horse, Collegeville Girl, and she's going back to the track and doing pretty good. He said that he was going to try to run her in those New York Red races, New York
October.
Red Day, but
yep.
He can't.
You know,
you got to let horses, and I guess a lot of people will be glad he doesn't show up with her because she is a runner. But it's no use compromising her overall career for the sake of one race and rushing her there. because there'll be plenty of races for her, and when she goes long, and you're going to really see a racehorse because she can run short or long. But she went out there this morning, and they closed the track early this morning because they're expecting all this residual effects of Hurricane Michael. It's only spitting and raining, but they closed the track with no break at 9 o'clock, and I guess tomorrow it's going to depend on the weather, whether they're even going to open the track at Parks. But we'll get through this rain, and you know what? Getting a little rain like this, a few inches of rain, is nothing compared to what they had to endure in Florida. My heart goes out to those people. You know, it's a tough situation. I guess it's the price you pay to live in a beautiful area. But when it hits the way it hit down there, and the flooding and the rain and the winds and the destruction, you really got to feel for those people that are in Florida, just as we had to feel for the ones in South Carolina,
yep.
North Carolina.
Yep.
You know, it's a tough time of year. I was born in September, and they call that the start of the hurricane months, and I guess I was born, and it was the start of the hurricane months, and look at me. I feel like at times I'm a person with a lot of energy and a hurricane in his own way.
Well, I got it. You know, you bring up South Carolina as part of it, as part of that mention, and of course, the images are just unbelievable. And we wish everybody, you know, there's two deaths, and the destruction, the property destruction is extensive. But you bring up South Carolina. You missed the show yesterday. You missed Gory Smith, Hammy Smith's brother.
I'm sorry I missed that. Like I said yesterday, I was on the track all morning and they're training these horses according to the weather and a lot of, and it took us all morning to get some horses out, but I did miss it. I missed the entire show. Sorry about that, Steve.
That's all right.
I dropped the ball on you.
Well, but the reason I'm stressing is just because of Smith's incredible history of getting, you know, young riders, whether they ended up being in the afternoon or, you know, just exercise riders that you know, work horses for a career. His decades of training of riders is second to none between Antley and the McCarrans, and even recently, you know, I had to ask him. Steve Hamilton, Cowboy Steve Hamilton, sent Wesley down to him.
Right, and he's definitely a product of that. Where he hasn't lost his touch when it comes to teaching riders. You know, that was an art. When I was a kid, you know, and of course in the 60s and 70s, but you had to understand that in the 40s and 50s and over the years, that was something that trainers and people prided themselves on, who they brought out, you know, where they could say, oh, I brought out Hardtack, or I brought out Colmone, or, you know, the old guys. And as time went on, there were trainers that were really renowned when it came to who they taught, who they brought around. You know, there were trainers that were in the times that I came around, there was still trainers that was bringing out riders. I'm trying to think of some of the names, and you'd say, yeah. But even as recently as when Marty Fallon was still training in Jersey and Pennsylvania, and it was passed on, of course, but he brought out many riders and prided themselves in doing that. And guys like T.P. Haraway, you know, and Barry, T.J. Barry, guys like that, they prided themselves in bringing out. E.W. King brought my uncle out, you know, E.W. King. And, of course, they trained some of their great horses, and they prepped some of their offsprings, like Preston King, to be, you know, great trainers. But that was an art. And once they established themselves as a person that would bring a rider out, teach them the ropes, and teach them the right way. And you know what the right way was? It was you walked horses for a while. It was a 3-year ordeal, a minimum. And you walked them, you rubbed them, you got on the pony and learned to pony them, and then they allowed you to get on horses on the shed row, and you shed rode them, and you learned to communicate with the horse, and then they let you get out on the racetrack, and when you got run off with, you know, they said, well, you got a lot more to learn, son, but, you know, no harm done. I came around with a man that didn't bring a lot of riders out, but he prided himself in the few riders that he did bring out, C.P. Coco. And I'll never forget the kind of teacher these guys were. You know, I can remember getting on a horse and for Charlie Coco after I had rubbed horses, walked horses, you know, ponied horses, took horses to the post in the afternoon, and I'd get on this one horse. I'll never forget the morning. This is the kind of teacher they were. The horse ran off with me. And he says, well, you got a little, you know, never said, well, the horse is in 2 days, Tone. What'd you do? You let this horse run off. You know, you can't, you don't let horses do things. Horses do things because they can do it with an inexperienced rider. And he never said a word. He says, well, you know what? You'll figure out how to gallop him. He's in a couple of days. He's all right. You know, and they gave you confidence, and they taught you how to ride. And, of course, there was pressure exerted upon you to do the right thing. But as long as they knew you were trying your best, most of the good teachers went along with you. And if something didn't work out, they'd say, maybe you'll do better tomorrow, or maybe you'll gallop him better next time. You know, I can remember when I won my first race, and it was unheard of in those days for a rider to win right off the bat. They usually made you ride 50, maybe 50 races before they would let you win a race or put you on a horse that could win a race. And I won my first race, and Charlie was old school, but he says, you're ready. Put me on 8 horses that week, 5 of them won. But do you know what I was doing in the afternoon when I got done early and left the jocks room? I was ponying horses in the later races if he had horses in, until the stewards, old man Palmer, came to Charlie one day right in front of me. He says, Charlie, this boy's riding races. You know, he's out there in the afternoon riding races. And then you
can't pony.
And now he's out there in the afternoon after he's done riding ponying horses. Doesn't look good to the public, he says. Because they told me, they said, you know, you can't pony horses. I said, what do you mean I can't pony horses? Charlie Coco tells me what I can and can't do. He has my contract. You know, in those days, you had 3-year contracts. And so old man Palmer went to him. He says, doesn't look good him ponying horses, Charlie. We don't want him out here in the afternoon. Other than riding, we don't want him out here ponying. And that's how I got off the hook for ponying horses. But these old school trainers, they made you work. But they taught you. You know, they didn't just teach you how to sit on a horse's back. They taught you how to sit underneath of that summer gun and put on running bandage, put on standing bandage. You know, I can remember we shipped a horse from New York to Louisiana. And the planes got all screwed up. You know, we left out of New York. Wound up taking about 12 hours of planes to get to Louisiana. So when the horse ran, I'll never forget this horse. His name was Special Glow. Tony Lagercio rode the horse. I was just rubbing and galloping him at the time. So, of course, he left the gate, first jump out of gate, fell on his head, and Tony Lagercio came off, and that was our trip to Louisiana for the Louisiana Derby with Special Glow, and a long plane ride down there because all the planes got screwed up and the connections were a mess. He says, well, Tone, he says, we ain't taking no plane back. He says, the van will be here to pick you up tomorrow morning. And it's 32 hours on a van shipping back.
Jesus.
But that's what they taught you to be a part of the workforce, not just being a jockey. You were a part of what it took to do everything you could do to learn about a racehorse and to do everything from running them. The first horse I won on, he broke down at Garden State and Bowed in the spring of the meet. The next year, the summer, he brought him back to the races and I rode him. I was rubbing him and I rode him and he won and he paid $106.40. So, you know, there's so many great memories and I could rattle on, which I'm not going to do because I'm sure you got some better.
No, this is great. This is great.
But, you know, they taught you. And that's when you interview people, whether now it's Hamilton Smith with his son Weston got the opportunity to learn the right way of doing it. Isn't he a product of that? Do you watch the kid ride? You know, he's going to be around for a long time because he knows what he's doing. He has respect for the animal, and he's been taught from the bottom up. And I'm just looking out my window now, and it's pouring raining. Glad they closed the track early.
There you go. The name that and the example that is I think been well documented I think has increased awareness in the modern, you know, horse player is what Proctor did with Drayden Van Dyke. And that schooling and, you know, the way in which he had to work on the shed row, and it really got the classic apprenticeship in the barn, you know, as opposed, not that there's anything wrong with the riders that go to academies, in whether they're Central and South American academies or in Puerto Rico and et cetera, and even, you know, the North American Riding Academy. There's all different ways to learn, but that, you know, that on the ground, walking horses and grooming and the ground up, you know, check off all the boxes. Rich Migliori talks about it with the Tamaros, and or not Tamaro. Oh my gosh, Richie's. Oh, for goodness sakes, what is wrong with me? DeMauro. I'll love you, DeMauro. DeMauro's another day. you know, those classic educations, and Proctor, you know, got it himself from his father, who was, they say, as tough a taskmaster as there was. And look at the result. Look at what Drayden Van Dyke has become. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and he's in a colony of world-class riders. And, you know, he started out, as anybody would start out, just trying to produce and be a part of the colony. And now he's a major mainstay part of the colony. He does a great job. And that learning from the ground up, you know, it teaches you a lot about horses. It teaches you a lot of respect for what they do. You know, they're not, you don't have that idea that they're mechanical. You understand that they're physical. They're beings with feelings. They're beings that you learn to communicate with because you've been around them. And they teach you to communicate. You know, if a jock says, well, I can't get along with this horse, that's his inability. It's not always the horse's inability or disability or whatever you want to call it to communicate with you. It's your disability or inability to understand what he's telling you. But in learning how to understand these animals, you learn what makes them tick from the ground up. You know, it's old school, but it worked for many years, and we had so many superstar riders and legends come out of that type of education with horses. And like you say, no disrespect for the way a lot of them are taught in these schools, because you need that. You know, it works. You see a lot of these kids come from Panama, Puerto Rico, and they're polished riders. And you know what? Some of them are not just polished riders because they went to school. They also have a history with horses, maybe from the time they were little kids, because their families were connected, you know, to the horse culture, to the racing culture of that particular country. But, you know, the schools do serve a purpose, and they produce. And the thing of it is, you know, you don't have a lot of people out there that want to take the responsibility of taking a young kid under his wing. I can remember when Charlie Coco took me under his wing. He was running out of horses. We were at Monmouth Park, and I was staying up there for the summer. He says, listen, Tone, I don't have enough horses here to do you any good. He says, I'm going to send you over to Gene Navarro. And what a world-class trainer he was, and meticulous and neat as a pin, and dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's when it came to his horses. You know, here's a guy that had a little centrifuge in his tack room and would take the blood and see what his horses' bloods were and how they, you know, he was unbelievable. And it was an honor to be able to be associated with people like that, where they said, you know what, this kid wants to learn. He doesn't maybe know a lot right now, but he's willing to learn, and I want to teach him. But that was the mentality of a lot of those old trainers. They wanted to teach a kid that wanted to learn. And if you were a punk and you didn't want to learn, believe me, they kicked you in the ass and said, see you later, son. You know, well, I ain't got time for you. Don't waste my time. But that was an honor when one trainer would say, listen, I can't use you, but I'm going to put you with so-and-so, you know, Gene Navarro. I'll never forget. He let me get on the pony at the end of the morning after all the horses were done, and after we got done doing up, there'd be one horse. He said, you can ride this horse around the shed row. And Charlie told me, start helping you learn something about riding them. You're learning enough about sitting underneath them. Now learn to sit on them. And that's the way they taught you. It's old school. It worked. And that's why we got a lot of young riders that turned out to be superstars and legends, other than me.
Well, no, you're a legend. Who's kidding who?
In my own mind.
No, it's so ridiculous. You know, Tony, before we go, too, part of that conversation, the reason I ended up connecting with Frank Smith, with Gorey, was because yesterday was the anniversary from 1974 at Lincoln Downs of Denise Boudreau and Mike LaPonce, the contest of the sexes, that the match race between them that Boudreau won, and then a week later they swapped mounts and Boudreau won again. And you know, one of the things I wanted to do with that conversation yesterday, for whatever reason, and you and I have talked about the female rider pioneers, and you basically, your career it spans the entire era of, you know, the proliferation of female riders. And Denise Boudreau, for whatever reason, does not get the notice that she should among the pioneers, because by every measure, and every horseman that used her, and horse players say that she was absolutely as good as anybody, not just any female rider, but she was good as anybody in the room that she rode against all those years in New England, and then, you know, when she would come into New York and elsewhere.
Right, absolutely. You know, you didn't have to say, oh, well, she's a girl rider, you know, so she's a female rider, and you know the respect I have from all of them. A lot of times the recognition and respect comes from where your base of operation was, and you know, if your base operation wasn't in California and New York, you know, you didn't always get the recognition, even if you did get the respect of your of the people that you worked with. You didn't always get the respect because you didn't stay at a place like New York, or you didn't stay in California, you didn't stay in Florida, you didn't stay in New Jersey, you know, and you were either New England or Philadelphia Park, whatever. But Barbara Jo Rubin, when they, you know, I remember when she started out, and Barbara Jo Rubin, Barbara Adar, you know, riders like that. And they got recognition because they were either in Kentucky, or they were in Jersey, or they were in what were considered your premier racing states. But she was quality rider, could ride any place in the country, and did. But I guess maybe the recognition wasn't acquired because maybe her base of operation was mainly, I guess it was New England, Suffolk, Rockingham, and those tracks. And listen, those tracks have a great tradition and heritage and history to them. They're, as far as I'm concerned, tracks, they're world-class tracks when it comes to what Suffolk was or Rockingham. Maybe they didn't get the recognition and respect that they deserved. But they were. And the people in the business have the respect and recognition for riders that rode in those tracks. You know what? It's just sometimes that's the part of the business that's disheartening, because there are certain areas that, as long as you are associated with that area, you're premier, you're a first class, you're a number one, whatever it is, trainer, rider, horse. You know, I got to just put this in one more time, because I've said it before. But look at Parks now, with the caliber of horse and the Racehorse Development Fund, what it's done for the horse population at Parks. Aren't they going to different racetracks, premier racetracks, graded stakes, and winning? You know, even Uriah St. Louis wins a graded stake. That was an interesting interview with that you had with him, and I loved it. I laughed at the end of the interview when he says, yeah, it's tough getting in the stable gate, though.
You know? That was hysterical.
Yeah, and he's not
that was great.
But look at the horse population, how the Racehorse Development Fund and the revenue that's generated from slots that's given to the horses. Look what it's done for the horses at parks. We had several horses go to Saratoga, one of the toughest tracks you can ship into, especially with young horses, and not be training there and win. We had horses winning graded stakes in New York. We have trainers at parks at Carver Hall, Uriah St. Louis, Richard Vega, and guys that are stable there. So the Racehorse Development Fund has done what it's supposed to do, you know, enhance the horse caliber of horse at parks. And let's hope that nobody touches that fund because it's doing the job that it's supposed to do. Now all we got to do is hope that the racetrack promotes the business more so than what they are. I mean, they do a lot of work there in the casino and every place, and hopefully the racetrack will get some recognition. And you know what I like to see with sports betting? I hope they put a sports betting facility on the horse side of the casino, on the horse racing end of the parks, racetrack, and casino, because it is a sport. You know, Steve, horse racing is a sport, isn't it?
Of course, but
it'll be over in the casino.
Yeah, it'll be in the casino, which is too bad. Although there really would be no harm in.
Just a small facility.
Having windows. There's really no reason why they couldn't have the betting windows as well. But the for those that hadn't seen last week, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania awarding the sports betting franchising to parks and where's the other? Who else got it? One of the other casino properties. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I was only interested in
what was happening at parks. That's what the reference is here, Tony. So, well, Tony, I appreciate it as always. And there was a lot of good things that happened here to talk with you about, and wanted to fit them in. No calls coming this weekend, but we're on the watch. We got you on the watch list.
I'll keep you informed, and I tell you, it was so rewarding to see the positive response that your listening audience gave me, and then people, when I did get a chance to ride Papa Czar to a win performance a couple Sundays ago, it's really so refreshing to see that people just don't think you're an old castaway old shoe.
An old shoe. Too funny.
I thank all those people, and then I thank you, Steve, for the job that you do. And, you know, you do a great job, and I certainly appreciate it, and the horse racing community appreciates it. You take care, and it's always a pleasure, Steve.
Have a great week, Tony. We'll talk next week, and heading down toward Jersey for Far Hills a week from Saturday, of course. And there's actually, as we go to the break, I'm going to have a visit from Guy Torsiglieri to talk about this. The pre-entries, basically, the nominations came out for Far Hills, and it should be just tremendous. Going to be a big field for the Grand National. And Naira and Far Hills are going to do a cross-country, really, you know, across New York, New Jersey, pick four on Grand National Day. I'm gonna guess that the Foxbrook will be the other jump race, but there'll be a pick four on that Saturday that encompasses Grand National. I'm going to guess the Foxbrook and two of probably maybe the Empire Classic or whatever. They'll be, because that's New York Showcase Day. So two of the, or usually is, yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. The cross-country pick four this week is Keeneland with the Queen Elizabeth and Woodbine. So Keeneland Woodbine on Saturday, but then next Saturday, Far Hills, which has got Paramutual for the first time. They worked for years. A Far Hills Belmont pick four. It's going to be fun. We'll bring in all the heavyweights, Clancy's and all. Back after this, we'll bring in the heavyweight, Steve Haskin.
next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.